Meeting will come to order. We are now holding the Port of Astoria Board of Commissioners workshop session. Thank you for coming. May we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Hill.
Here.
Commissioner Fickle.
Here.
Commissioner Stevens.
Here.
Commissioner Campbell.
Here.
And Commissioner Roan.
Here. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Are there changes or additions to the agenda? Seeing none, we'll carry on. Public comment is an opportunity to speak to the commission for 3 minutes regarding any topic. In person, with those wishing to speak, must fill out a public comment form. Those participating via Zoom may raise their hands during the public comment period. Do we have any public comments? Okay, advisory, Pier 2 mitigation update. Shane Jensen, be online.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you turn them up a little bit? We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. So I was asked today to give an update really quick on the mitigation site with with respect to the permitting of the Pier 2 West Rehabilitation Project, specifically regarding an easement that the port was made aware of by the Section 408 group recently. The first indication of an issue with the mitigation site with respect to the easement was the second week of March and was communicated by the Section 408 group of the Corps to our environmental consultant, Eric Campbell. The 408 group at that time was uncertain of the implications of the easement and so simply instructed Campbell to await some further instruction and information from the Corps. The issue was somewhat complicated by the fact that the 408 group would not share a copy of the easement with the port and instead instructed the port to simply submit a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request. Because this would have caused a lot of delay, we were forced to try to obtain it by other channels just so we could assess whether or not this easement even existed and whether it was legitimate. Because the easement, and this is from 1957, was between Clatsop County and the Corps, I contacted the county and spoke with Heather Chapman in the Assessment and Taxation Office. After explaining the background, Heather volunteered to request a copy of the easement from the Corps. She did so, secured a copy, and within a couple of days, we had it, saving the port much headache and delay. Heather's assistance has been much appreciated. Once we got a copy of the easement, it dates from 1957. Ironmark Surveying was able to complete a desktop survey using the legal description from the easement document itself, along with the GIS data points from PHS for the mitigation site. And we did confirm that the mitigation site is indeed within the boundaries of this easement. Subsequent communications with DSL and the Department of Justice revealed that DSL believes that the state's ownership of the parcel at issue predates the county's ownership, which calls into question the validity of the easement agreement itself. Blake Helm at DSL is currently working with counsel at DOJ to sort this out. The last request for an update was sent on April 17th, and we haven't had any word to date on that point. Also, the port ordered title work on both parcels at issue. The final reports were received on April 14th. Review of the documents failed to reveal the owner of the property in 1957, but this is likely related to the fact that the applicable document is unreadable. A lot of it is just blank. We followed up with Tycor Title to get some clarification on this. On the 15th and the 17th, and we haven't received any word back yet. So we'll continue to work with Tycor Title to get that document. And finally, even if DSL and DOJ confirm that the easement is valid, it is not clear that the easement agreement should interfere with the port's mitigation plan. The easement basically confers on the Corps the right to dump dredge spoils excavated from the Skipanon Waterway on any part of the tract at issue. Yeah, the tract we're talking about is basically the entire northern section of the Skipanon Peninsula. So, under these terms, it is difficult to see how the owner, of course, at this point, we don't know who that was, retains any rights at all in this tract of land. For the question is raised, what rights and privileges in land can be enjoyed at all, where the federal government has an easement to dump dredge spoils at any time and at any place on the tract? So this is why DSL at this point still retains the position that even if the easement is valid, it doesn't interfere with DSL's right to proceed with the mitigation plan. So as it stands, the port is waiting for DSL DOJ to sort out the ownership issues that have been raised and for Tycor Title to respond to the port with more information about the discrepancies in the title reports. Additionally, the port is currently working on a draft memo to update legislators on the status of the permitting and request their assistance should the process stall any further. I know I've laid a lot of information on everybody. If you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to entertain those right now.
You talk about the right to dump dredge spoils on the, is that the entire Skipanon Peninsula? I guess my question specifically relates to the property currently owned by the port. My question is, if there's an issue of dredge spoils, does it already include the port-owned property, or can we use the port-owned property as a designated area for dredge spoils to be dumped if that's what they require?
No, the easement description, the legal description of the easement does not include currently port-owned property. It only includes DSL-owned land, state-owned land.
Would it work for the port to for work for the Corps to be able to dump dredge spoils? It's about the same size in the same area as the property that we have potential DSL lease from, or does that even matter?
That may be a solution in the future. We're not to that point yet where we would probably suggest that. The parcel at issue here is almost 237 acres, and so it is difficult to see how using 1 acre out of that 237, again, assuming this agreement is valid, would interfere with the Corps' right to deposit dredge spoils on that peninsula. Because this easement basically covers almost the entire northern section, which is over 200 acres, 237 acres, according to the survey. And we're using up just over one. So there's a lot of questions to work through yet at this point. First, I mean, the first step was to determine whether or not the mitigation site was indeed within the easement description. We determined that it was. The second step is to determine whether or not this easement agreement is even valid. The easement agreement was made between Clatsop County and DSL, the state. Excuse me, between Clatsop County and the Corps. However, the state is claiming that their ownership of the property predates the county's, which raises a significant issue as to whether or not this easement agreement is even valid. How could the county enter into an easement agreement with the Corps if it was state-owned property in 1957? So we first need to sort out that issue. Once we sort out that, depending on which way that goes, then we'll have direction on where to go from there. If it turns out that the state determines that the county didn't even own the land at the time, then the state should take the position that this agreement was invalid, and then the whole Section 408 review process goes away. That would be the ideal. If, however, the state and DSL determine that this easement agreement is valid. At that point, the port would need to work with the state as well would need to work with the Section 408 group and move through what's called a Section 408 review, where the port would basically need to show the Corps that this mitigation project would not substantially interfere with their ability to deposit dredge spoils from the Skipanon Waterway on the northern half of the Skipanon Peninsula. So those are the possible scenarios. We don't know which way it's going to go yet. Either way, it's going to cause some unanticipated delay in the permitting process. One of the frustrations with this particular situation is the port has been having meetings with the Corps probably half a dozen times since 2023, and the Corps has never brought this particular easement to the attention of the port. So it's definitely a last-minute thing because we've got several consultations in the permitting process already done. And so this is kind of last minute. Any other
When do you think,
questions?
I'll ask one more, and then when do you think you might have some resolution on this? Do you, 30 days, 60 days?
It's really tough to tell. I have been as much as a cattle prod as I can to DOJ and DSL. All we can really do at this point is continue to ask for reminders, status updates on how the work is progressing, on them working out the ownership issues. The only, as I said earlier, we will work on a memo to update the legislators to what's going on, including Merkley and Wyden's office, in case the process stalls to the point where we just have to escalate this up higher to get some movement.
Our executive director has called out Suzanne Bonamici as being specifically helpful. I assume that you will include her in that update.
We will, yes, as well as state legislators.
Commissioner Campbell, you had a question?
Maybe they can explain to us what this is all about. Mitigation. Is this for the
Pier two.
Pier 2 thing?
Yes.
I thought that was straightened out.
It's not.
It was straightened out in the sense that we had received approval from the city of Warrenton, but through the federal permit process, we learned the information that was brought forward today. I guess for the benefit of those in attendance, this mitigation is required as part of our Pier 2 project because, in theory, the new seawall on the west side of Pier 2 is going to raise the water table in the lower Columbia River. And so we have to mitigate that and basically go dig a hole somewhere else so that we don't raise the level of the river.
Shane, I have a question. You mentioned that this was a last-minute thing. The Corps is a big outfit with several departments, as you know. Do you know from where that last-minute thing came from? Was it somebody else who wasn't involved in the process, or is there someone behind the curtain?
This comes specifically from what's called the Section 408 group under a Section 408 review. So it is a separate department from what we call the core regulatory. So this came from the Section 408 group.
In the past, we've had people read articles in the newspaper and then come back to the port with specific issues that they had relative to what they read in an article. I'm not blaming the Astorian. My point is somebody found something from someone. Commissioner Stevens, I think, is trying to ask who someone might be if that's the case. I don't think we know.
No, as far as we know, this issue was raised simply by the Section 408 group in their as they collaborated internally with the core regulatory through this permitting process.
Well, to be specific, is the National Marine Fisheries a part of that 408 group?
They are not. No,
Okay.
that's a separate consultation.
All right, thanks.
Where is the Section 408 group?
They are part of the core.
Geographically, where are they located?
Oh, I believe they're in Portland, but don't quote me on that.
Let me say something here. Back in late 60s, the county had title to that property. At that time, it was transmitted to the fort to build a facility for Alumax, the aluminum plant that was going to go in where the shopping mall is now. And that never did pan out. So, anyway, the port ended up with that whole peninsula in their ownership. Somewhere, 10, 12, 14 years ago, the point of that property out there, the outer part, fell back into the hands of the state land board. We've never found out who in the port signed it over what. What do you see there? In other words, the state land board grabbed it back for some reason. They said they bought it. I don't know who from. There's no paperwork service at all as to who owns that property or
Well,
when
it's.
it, why or when it was transferred back to the state.
It's a very good question, Commissioner Campbell, because when we ordered the title report from Tycor Title, they reported that the parcel at issue was owned by the Port of Astoria. Yet, when you go on to the county GIS and the port GIS, the state's the owner of that parcel. And this is one of the discrepancies that we're trying to resolve with the title company, because that was the very first thing I saw in the title report that made no sense. Like, in all the years I've worked for and on behalf of the port, that parcel's been owned by the state. And the title report coming back saying that the Port of Astoria is the owner of that parcel.
That should be correct
So there's more
because
than one issue to work out with the title company.
the state turned it over to the county. At that time, the county Max wanted to build there. In turn, the county had ownership of it, and they turned it over to the port. The whole reason is to build that dock and all those facilities to unload material on.
I have a
And all of a
question.
sudden, here in the last 12, 14 years, the state land board has taken ownership of it and said they bought it back. But nobody has any paperwork to describe it. How does that happen?
Well, this process we're going through should clarify that.
Commissioner Fickell has a question.
Yes, I do. Is it typical or atypical for this information to be shielded behind a FOIA, the required to have a FOIA request to obtain more information about this issue?
I do not know whether it's common or not in for the Section 408 group. I know in a circumstance like this where you have a federal government agency saying, "Hey, we can't move forward with your mitigation plan because we've got this agreement that, you know, this easement that interferes with your, you know, plan to do the mitigation plan." Normally, they would just simply share that with the applicant. I know that through the our environmental consultant did. I mean, that's his opinion. The bottom line is our environmental consultant, Eric Campbell, that this is not the only project that the Section 408 group is, shall we say, obstructing, at least from the applicant's viewpoint. This is not the only one. There are several projects around Oregon right now that are basically just held up in this Section 408 review.
Can you elaborate a little bit for myself? What is the stated purpose for this Section 408 group? What did they do? What is their
My
mandate?
understanding is their basic purpose is to ensure that federal levees, for example, if a project comes within a certain distance of, I don't know, I think it was 50 feet, if I remember correctly, of a federal levee, for example, then that is going to trigger a Section 408 review by the Corps to ensure that the project is not going to interfere or cause any damage to or any alteration to a federal levee. Now, Section 408 could involve other federal interests, but that's the main interest that a Section 408 view would implicate. And we are indeed close to a levee in this project, but we thought that we were far enough away from it that the Section 408 review would not be triggered. And that is what we that is the understanding that we had proceeded on for quite some time.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hill, you have a question?
I do not.
I have one more comment, Mr. Chairman. When I look at this, I consider this life-threatening to our Pier 2 repairs. More delay is like poking the bear again, just taunting another storm to come in and damage the pier. I'd like to hear a comment from the director about that, if he agrees.
Deputy Director has a comment, looks like.
Yeah, and just to underscore what Shane's saying, that, you know, with 237 acres and we only have a 1 acre mitigation site, that's less than one half of 1% of the entire area. And the reason that this easement is there at all is for the deposition of dredge spoils, which they haven't used in 20 years. So to me, it's one of these things that we're going to have to wait very little on, and we're going to have to escalate it quickly because just the common sense, the sniff test is that this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. We're going to need to get to somebody that can hopefully make a decision.
It's not good news for Pier 2.
I would like to think that somebody from our federal delegation could solve this problem with a phone call. I think that's what they're there for. So
agreed.
I hope you reach out to them sooner than later.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments?
Well, I do remember when the Corps authorized the dredge spoil site down there. It was in 65, I believe.
We're talking about 57.
Yeah, and that's in 65.
That's where the paperwork, and that's so, where the problem is.
The Corps had pumped in there previous to that from the panel job. But that's basically why that was built.
Well, Shane, thank you very much for a thorough update.
You're welcome.
But the update at least was thorough, if nothing else. So thank you for that, and thank you for your hard work.
You were bringing good news.
Good luck.
Yeah, thank you for your time, Commissioners.
We wouldn't have a meeting if it was good news, right? So
thank you.
So thank you. Our next item has to do with action item, DSL draft waterway easement. I'll allow staff to introduce the topic.
While we're on the subject of easements, today on page 3 of your packet, we have an easement for basically the approach for runway 26 at the airport. This is actually DSL-owned property. We have with us today Dario Frisone. And in order for us to continue using this this property, the Department of State Lands has submitted this easement. It's a basically a 30-year easement that is requiring 30 years of payment up front, which is a little unheard of. So with that, I wanted to just turn it over to Dario and see if you wanted to give a bit of an overview of the easement, why this is needed, and then open it up for questions. Dario, you're on.
Thank you so much. My name is Dario Frisone. I'm a proprietary coordinator with the Oregon Department of State Lands. My work focuses on the authorization of uses on state-owned waterways, and I'm joined here today by my supervisor, operations manager, Brandy Bryant. So I'd like to start by saying thank you to the members of the commission for hearing me today. And as was indicated previously, I'm here primarily to answer questions regarding easement application 65395-EA. But before doing so, I had also corresponded with Shane and Deanna. Is it Deanna? Yes. Regarding providing a brief informational presentation about the Oregon Department of State Lands Proprietary Waterway Program. If you're interested in that, would that be something that we're interested in today?
Yes, it would be.
Okay. If it's okay, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen and present the information. Give me just a second to work with technology. And is everybody seeing my screen?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So as a bit of background information, the Department of State Lands is the administrative agency of the State Land Board. The State Land Board is made up of the governor, the secretary of state, and the treasurer of the state of Oregon oversees the Common School Fund. The Common School Fund sends millions of dollars every year to Oregon's public schools. In 2024, for example, it sent $74.2 million to Oregon public schools. As the land board's administrative agency, The Department of State Lands manages lands to benefit schools, protect waters and wetlands, and oversees the South Slough Reserve and the Elliott State Research Forest. This is a high-level overview of the agency. So under the State Land Board is the agency director, Caitlin Lovell. Director Lovell was recently appointed to the position in July 2025. There are three main divisions under the director: aquatic resources, land management, and administration. And there are also a few positions in the agency that are just straight under the director, like human resources, government relations, and communications. The department's aquatic resources management program, where I primarily work out of for proprietary issues, typically deals with statutory land, which is sometimes referred to as non-trust land. And our land management program deals with constitutional land, which is sometimes referred to as trust land. When talking about these different categories of land, one of the main considerations are agency management obligations. So for example, the department tries to manage trust land for the benefit of the state's common school fund in particular, while the focus for non-trust lands are, you know, public trust rights such as navigation, fishing, commerce, and recreation. Port staff may have already interacted with Department of State Land staff from our proprietary, regulatory, administrative, and land management departments regarding, you know, your existing waterway leases and removal fill permitting, and in the case of Pier 2, the maintenance project that's happening. So I'd also like to give a quick kudos here for the Port of Astoria staff that I work with frequently, as I've always found them to be really pleasant to work with and provide great customer service. So thank you. Now I'd like to provide a brief detail about the agency's proprietary program. The proprietary program mainly focuses on issues related to state ownership of waterways and other non-trust lands. So typically the first question about the proprietary program is, where does state ownership of waterways even come from? Well, when Oregon entered the Union, it entered on equal footing with other states, meaning that the state was granted certain rights, which were the same as other states that had already joined the Union and already been granted. Part of these rights included all tidal navigable waters within Oregon borders. The idea of tidal navigable waters originated centuries ago and was adopted from British law to become U.S. common law. When Congress approved Oregon's admission to the Union and the Oregon Constitution in 1859, the state's rights to tidal navigable waters were confirmed. The grant of these waters to the state was automatic. So that means that for Oregon, at least, there are no patents or other conveyances from the federal government. This also means that there's nothing to kick off the chain of title when researching ownership. The Department of State Lands considers tidal navigable waterways as statutory land or non-trust land. Some of the lands that I mentioned earlier where the primary management considerations are public trust rights. There are multiple ways that these waterways are referenced, including tidal navigable, navigable for tidal, navigable in fact, navigable in law, just plain navigable, or state-owned and Oregon-owned waterways. Those are all synonyms. I'd also like to note that navigable waterways that the state owns are not the same as the navigable waters of the United States that the federal government has regulatory jurisdiction over. So the next question is usually, which waterways have been determined to be state-owned? These waterways include ones that have been declared to be navigable for tidal through legislative, judicial, or administrative proceedings, tidally influenced waterways, the territorial sea, which is a portion of the Pacific Ocean, other waterways that are also named in the state constitution, such as the Columbia River and the Snake River, and meandered lakes. The department maintains a list of waterways that have been determined to be navigable for tidal, which can be found on the department website. So a few important points about waterways that have been determined to be tidal navigable are that state ownership generally begins at the line of ordinary high water, although sales or grants after statehood can affect that. These waterways may be used for public trust rights of fishing, navigation, commerce, and recreation. And the submerged and submersible lands of these waterways may be used in a proprietary manner, that is, in a way that a landowner might make use of them, if authorized by the Department of State Lands through a lease, license, registration, or easement, which is the primary focus of my job, to process applications for those types of uses of these lands. Again, importantly, proceeds generated from these non-trust lands does contribute to the Common School Fund. And the site of this easement that I mentioned earlier, that is the subject of discussion today at this meeting, is a bit different from a typical waterway that most DSL proprietary authorizations are issued for. So I also wanted to look at some information about this site specifically. This property includes roughly 45 acres of land, which were acquired by the Department of State Lands in 1987 and 1988. The majority of the land was contributed by the Port of Astoria, for which the port received mitigation credits. You can still see remnants from 1912 lots and streets platted for Fremont's addition to Warrenton on the tax lot maps, and DSL may want to pursue actually vacating those platted roads in the future. And DSL considers the lands at this site to be non-trust lands, so the use of these lands that require an easement need to be authorized under Division 123 OAR, and management or applications for uses of these lands are handled by the department's proprietary staff, such as myself. Interestingly, this site was also established as a mitigation bank. It was a cooperative project between the Port of Astoria and the Department of State Lands and resulted in the first mitigation bank ever established in Oregon. The mitigation bank agreement was signed in 1987, and the purpose of the project was for mitigation credits for the airport industrial park. Dikes were also breached to restore tidal influence as part of the project. And that concludes my presentation. So thank you, and let me end my slideshow and stop sharing. If I can manage that.
So the staff wants to introduce the topic of discussion in our agenda for action related to DSL.
Can I ask a couple of questions first?
Please.
Thank you for the presentation, Dario. So I guess,
yes.
First of all, just on the determination of the time component, as well as the dollars and the timing of when those dollars are due, how is it that that those are determined?
Yes, thank you so much for that question. So as a part of the Division 123 OAR that I mentioned earlier, related to easement application review and approval process, that's 141-123-0050, section 10, so sub 10 of that OAR. It says that the department will not grant an easement to an applicant until it has received all fees and compensation specified in these rules, which basically precludes the ability for the department to take compensation after issuing the easement. All of the compensation is due before the easement is issued. That's standard practice for easements issued under this OAR. I'm aware of two exceptions from about 50 years ago. So the OAR may have been different at that time, but current rule prohibits us from doing like an annualized compensation. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, you could give it back to us. You took it away from us.
I understand
Didn't
that.
pay us anything when you took it.
I think there was some compensation provided for the land, but I don't know how much.
With the question the executive director asked, executive director, did you get the answer that you wanted to hear? Or you didn't get the answer you wanted to hear, but you have an answer to the question you asked, rather.
Yeah, is there any mechanism that is available for some sort of an annual payment versus the upfront for 30 years?
Unfortunately, no, not according to OAR. We're not allowed to issue an easement until we've received all compensation required by the rule.
Oh, that's Deputy Director.
Is this an is we're not renewing something. This is a new thing, right? And
That's correct.
it's triggered because of the infrastructure that's out there for the approach for runway 26, the lights, the road, the such and such.
Yeah, the Mauser, the utility shed, the fence, the roads. Yes.
Yes. And is this something that you're attending a lot of meetings like this for different cities and agencies and entities around the state that have airports and
No, this is the first commission meeting that I've been requested at.
okay. So, but oh, okay.
So what triggered it?
What triggered the need for the easement?
Yes.
I believe there was an application submitted for a culvert and tide gate replacement near at on this, adjacent to this property or on this across this property. The culvert goes through this property, and at that time it was reviewed, and basically I noted that there's no authorization for the existing infrastructure that would require an easement for the use of state-owned lands at this location.
Okay. We've got an experienced chairman here who's been in local government a lot. I'm just perplexed, though. He's not going to like what I say. The port purchases land when it needs to, for the good of the community and commerce and jobs and things. We use public funds, right? That's supported by state tax. And then we pay the owner of the property and we do good things, which it sounds like what triggered this necessity to buy the land would have been supporting goes against that idea. The port purchases land from DSL, takes the same tax money with the same justification for the good of the community, and we had to pay the state with state tax money. This is kind of circular in the idea of just a simple citizen. Where's the money go?
Is that a question for me?
Yes, it is, sir.
It is, all proceeds from easements for non-trust or for non-trust land go to the Common School Fund. So they're distributed to public schools, basically.
Well, we could do that if we saw it would be for the good of the port and for the good of the community.
It's a question to make in lieu of the DSL distributing the funds, we would.
I'm vexed by this situation. That's all. I think I probably overstated my case, but
I understand.
I'm looking at that page 12. There's red lines on it. I assume that's the culvert and tide gate at issue is point D. Is that Deputy Director? Is that tide gate? That's
Part of the infrastructure that goes out to the Mauser. So it's part of the airport infrastructure. So, and then whatever the shaded area that you see at the east side there of the photo, like right at the base of 26, are those areas that are actually inside the airport boundary.
Dario, if the commission doesn't vote to approve this easement and subsequent payment, what's the process forward for DSL?
Typically, if there's unauthorized uses of state-owned land, we would pursue trespass. So that would be a typical pathway for DSL. I don't think it's one that I would want to pursue.
Do have this fiduciary responsibility, so for the commission and the port, so it's not a personal issue. It's a responsibility that takes seriously. There are other questions or comments? So,
I wanted to understand that this part was something the Navy didn't turn over to the port. Or did DSL claim it?
is that a question for me
Because it
again?
was in outside the dike.
Is that a question directed to me?
Yes.
Okay. So my understanding is that the Department of State Lands acquired this property from the Port of Astoria, a portion of this property from the Port of Astoria.
Is that correct, staff? Did the state of Oregon
Is that something
acquire
that you
portion
set
of
up on the
the property?
survey that was recently done? The search that they're going through on it?
Is this a result of the 1987 agreement that you talked about with DSL or the mitigation bank?
Yeah,
Or is this?
I don't have an excellent understanding of all of the history involved in how the mitigation bank came to be or how the department acquired the property. I just know that, for this site in question, it's about 45 acres and it was acquired in 1987 to 1988. As I said in my presentation, the majority of that land was contributed by the port and, it's also, was developed into the first mitigation bank established in Oregon.
But we don't know if this specific ground is that deal, or is it in generic? Is it specific to this area, or is that area somewhere else? Do we know where that mitigation bank area is?
No, I believe it's this area.
Is that correct? So it is this area. The port made an agreement with DSL for the mitigation credits in this area that's being.
Correct.
We can discuss it, but I don't think we're going to win.
Staff recommendation is?
You have it.
Yeah.
Other comments?
So this is just going to be a lease for 30 years, and then we have to go through this again, right?
To tell him it's a question for him.
That's the question.
Yes, that would be correct, unless something changed with ownership or what the site is used for. But yes, we would have to go through it again in 30 years.
Well, we'll all still be here, so. Yes, unless someone has a constructive alternative, I don't see it. I would entertain a motion.
I'll move that we do this reluctantly. I would move that we approve this lease. Dario Fiance from DSL will be providing the informational presentation.
Well, that's above it. Above it.
Pardon?
Above the black line.
Oh, above the back line. Okay. More to approve the 30-year lease in a waterway. Easement number 65335-EA from the Department of State Lands and authorized payments in the amount of $31,141.03.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any additional questions or comments?
Bitter pill.
The nice ILS approach we have over there, it'd be a shame if something happened to it.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Thank you for your time.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Commissioner comments? Commissioner Campbell, you have any comments?
Yeah, recently we had a representative go to Iceland. I'd like to get a report on that. Why did we go and what were the results?
I haven't gone yet.
Pardon?
I haven't gone yet. It's next week.
We can get a report after he goes, perhaps. Do you have any other comments?
He went already.
He has not gone.
Next week.
I see money for it. We can pay it out.
You got to pay in advance before you buy a plane ticket.
Okay.
Any other comments?
Where are we going?
We've already authorized the expenditures. So I think we can have a constructive debrief and then we'll know.
That's not what I'd ask you. I says, why are we going?
I can talk to you about it offline if you want.
Pardon?
I can talk to you about it offline if you want.
Why don't we talk about it here? This is public knowledge.
You can put it on the agenda and do it at
the meeting. It's not on the agenda, so we can put it on the next agenda.
Okay.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes, a few comments. Last meeting, I mentioned this House Bill 4177, which was passed by the legislature, sent to the governor. That would change the rules of the public meeting laws, including the quorum of commissioners and discussing things with sequential electronic devices. I have to report that the governor vetoed that, so we're not going to be changing anything. The same rules are going to apply that we've had apply for the last 3 or 4 years. I did attend the Classic Community College Foundation dinner. Lots of local officials, business people were in attendance. I want to say that the Port of Astoria used to have a table at that dinner. I didn't see anybody else from staff or the commission that was there. I'd encourage you to attend. It's kind of fun, and you get to talk to people offline. It was a good thing. I did also notice there was an RFP in the Daily A for some work that you want to have done, some small repairs to Pier 3.
Right. So we're looking at doing some repairs to the ways, some upgrading of the ways to handle 150-ton travel lift.
Mm-hmm. The cargo pier needs to be strengthened?
No, the boat haul out.
The haul out. Yeah. Okay. The machinery or the carriage?
The travel lift is part of it.
Yeah.
Back to 150 ton, but in order for us to have 150 ton lift, we need to have the ways upgraded because they're only rated for 88 tons right now.
Oh, okay.
Basically, it's adding new piles and new pre-stressed concrete slabs to handle the weight.
Thank you.
That might be the high point of our meeting.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Commissioner Fickle.
A couple of weeks ago, I was flying and doing touch and goes on runway 8, which comes in, the approach comes in over Fred Meyer, the opposite of the one where we're being shaken down for. I'm an instructor, so I'm sitting on the right side. We're just going around and around, and I look out there, and the gas price at Fred Meyer was $3.90 something, and I went around again, and it had gone up to like 4.15, 4.20. This has been a couple of weeks
ago. You're gonna stop flying around. You need to land that plane.
There it is. And then when I went around to land, our fuel price was at the fuel pump was about the same for the avgas. And I know what conflict of interest is, but what's the opposite of a conflict of interest? It might be shooting myself in the foot because I like the cheap prices here. But Matt, do you think it might be a good idea to adjust the prices more regularly as the fuel prices are going up? We should raise them up.
Yeah, we're constantly looking at that. I'm looking at it minimally twice, three times a week.
Do you contract fuel in advance? Is that a possibility? Of course, we all would have contracted fuel.
Well, as far when we have the agreement with City Service Valcon, and when they get here, I mean, what we're basing our prices on is what the cost is, right? So it just depends. And lately, it's because all the stuff going on in Iran, oil shot through the roof, and prices went up sometimes $1, $1.50 a gallon overnight. So we're still profitable over there. Our margins on low lead are typically low anyway. We keep those relatively low, usually no more than like about 50 to 60 cents a gallon. But jet remains pretty profitable.
So you're adjusting the prices between deliveries.
Correct.
Okay. Because it seemed like it was
So,
4.29 for a long time
yeah, it's up.
and it bumped up.
So yeah, we just adjusted them today.
Okay. Yeah. Just don't want the price of that liquid in that big tank is going up. But
Yeah, it goes up.
make sure that we get that, even if it costs me money.
But we're also looking at the market on that though, because that was one thing. This was back to budget meetings 5 or 10 years ago, was a big point of discussion was pricing on fuel, both at the marina and the airport. And I think for a long time, our prices at the airport were sort of out of the normal range of what's some of the other airports in the same market were charging. And so we've tried to kind of strike a balance, whereas like the marina is a more strict model. It's just a simple math equation, really, based on where our cost is. I wish you were around back then telling us to raise prices, because when I was the finance director, that's what I was saying, and was getting a lot of pushbacks.
Well, thanks for hearing my comments. I didn't mean to make it seem like an agenda item, but I did want to ask that. Thank you.
I did get a text from somebody in New Zealand on April 6th. Their diesel prices would be equivalent to $16.80
Ooh,
here.
16.
16.
Now, I paid nine something for low lead in PDX 2 days ago. 9, 980 something. I'm very happy with what you're doing.
Commissioner Hill.
Oh, I don't have any comment.
In terms of community engagement, I attended the Astoria School District's vocational FFA banquet for members and community members, kind of the future. They have an extraordinary program at Astoria High School. I did get a shout out, which I was not expecting. So the Board of Astoria was in effect, and on that account, represented at it. I think they have over 400 students in that program from middle school and high school. They learn skills like parliamentary procedure, Robert Rules of Order. These are all things that I learned in that program. So it was pretty cool to see that program thriving in Astoria. With that, Executive Director comments.
Just a few things. We had a busy week last week. We hosted the Northwest Marine Terminals Association, had a conference here. And so just want to give a couple people a big thank you on that. From a staff perspective, Sue and Stacy were a big piece that they actually led the two bus tours. I know Deanna had a lot of involvement in that as well. And then from outside the organization, the keynote speaker Thursday afternoon was former Mayor Bruce Jones down at the museum. So I wanted to thank him for doing that. We actually did that same day, had a cruise ship in here. So it was a bit chaotic last Thursday. We've had two ships in now this season. Our next arrival is next Thursday. We actually have one coming Thursday and Friday of next week. It'll be busy down here. I guess with all the negative news that we've shared during the meeting, I did want to read a letter that came into the port today. And it reads, "To the administrator, I'm writing this note in appreciation of the excellent services recently received at your facility on 23 March 2026. I had traveled cross country to purchase and transport back to the Boston area a vessel purchased from a private owner from your area. The owner had made mutually agreed upon arrangements with personnel at the Port Authority to have the vessel lifted from the water and placed on its trailer in order to expedite my turnaround time in Astoria. While on the lifting strap, it was advised that the bottom be power washed as a precaution against violating any inter-traveled state laws pertaining to transporting, importing any form of invasive marine species That occurrence had not been a consideration when I was forming my transportation plans, and the advice was greatly appreciated. The work of lifting the boat, washing the bottom, and placing the vessel positively and firmly on the trailer was done with expedience, efficiency, proactive approach, attentiveness, and courtesy, making the return 3,200-mile trip to the East Coast less stressful than it might have been. The personnel responsible for my positive experience with the Port Authority are Brendan Stock and Billy Berger. I would appreciate a positive review of their professionalism be placed in their service jackets, along with a copy of this letter and my heartfelt personal thank you. With highest regards to your facility and personnel, Ben, and I'm going to butcher his last name, but Grudenskis, Ben Grudenskis. So it's always nice to get notes like this, kind of recognizing our staff and the work that they do. So that was greatly appreciated. And I did want to mention, I'm sure Commissioner Roan will talk about it to close the meeting, but we have a busy May coming up from a meeting perspective. It's budget season. So staff's been hard at work to get the budget proposal finalized and ready for the budget committee. So we have two meetings scheduled for May, along with a finance committee meeting, and then our normal port commission regular session and workshop session, as well as an airport advisory. So we have a meeting filled May upcoming, and did want to thank Melanie. She's not quite done yet, but she puts a ton of time into creating a budget. I know over the last few years, we've got a lot of positive feedback from our budget committee, just on the presentation she puts forth, the narrative that accompanies the numbers and makes it very easy to understand. So I'm hopeful that we'll have a smooth budget process this year, led by our finance director, Melanie Howard.
Those conclude your comments. I'd like to add, for the commission's benefit, that they were going to review the contract and evaluate our executive director in executive session, perhaps at our next meeting. And then I'd like to have the executive session at 4:30, not 3:30, at 4:30. And then if there's a balance of agenda items that need to be discussed, if we didn't make it through our agenda, we could discuss it then, or we could just actually correct myself. We can have the executive session following the regular session, so long as the regular session has been noted, that's acceptable. So I hope that in the next agenda packet, there'll be an updated contract. We can discuss a performance review in executive session, but not compensation. That has to occur in the regular session. So with that, I'd like to welcome. Thank you, everyone, for attending, and the meeting's adjourned.